This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living. I'm Juliet Jacobs, and on the show today, we will be discussing breast cancer. So breast cancer is one of the most treatable cancers, especially when it's detected early. And with greater accessibility to screening tests like mammograms, which are easy, safe and affordable, early detection of breast cancer has been improving. So why then are many women in Malaysia still being diagnosed with late-stage breast cancer? And what are the concerns that women have to get themselves checked? So here to answer all your questions and concerns is Dr. Jennifer Leong. She's a consultant clinical oncologist from Sunway Medical Center. Welcome, Dr. Jennifer. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you, Juliet. It's good to be back in the show.
Yes, absolute pleasure. We caught up
today.
Yeah, we caught up about a year ago. Thank you so much for joining us. So just I want to tell our listeners, you know, we've also got a special giveaway at the end of today's show where you can win a voucher for a free mammogram screening at Sunway Medical Center. You'll be eligible to win if you're a woman aged 40 and above, and if this will be your first mammogram with Sunway Medical Center. So stay tuned till the end of the show and find out how you can participate. And if you have any questions at all for Dr. Jennifer, all about breast cancer, breast self-exams, mammograms, you know, feel free to call us at 03-7733-2900. You can send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. So Dr. Jennifer, again, thank you for joining us. So, you know, just to get started, I know that based on the National Cancer Registry report 2012 to 2016, almost half of breast cancer among women in Malaysia are detected in stages 3 and 4, and that's at about 47.9%, right? And why are we still seeing a significant number of women being diagnosed late? You know, how do we compare to other countries in the region?
First of all, I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. So, Juliet, you've rightfully captured the data where we have seen and we are still seeing that a lot of women are presenting at a locally advanced or advanced stage of cancer. So, first of all, let me enlighten the listeners. Breast cancer is essentially divided into 4 stages. So we have the early stage breast cancer, which is stage 1, and stage 2. So stage 1 being the disease primarily confined to the breast, and stage 2, it has spread to the regional lymph nodes. And usually when we say locally advanced, it would be stage 3, where upfront surgery may not be possible and some form of neoadjuvant treatment or treatment is required to shrink the disease or surgery is enabled. And then stage 4, unfortunately, is when the disease has spread beyond the primary site. So we're looking into distant sites such as liver, lungs, or bones. So when we look at the National Cancer Registry in Malaysia, which thankfully, thanks to a very dedicated group of clinicians, as well as health staff to capture this data, we see that from 2007 right up till 2016, which is 2 registries, we are still seeing that there is an increase in stage 3 and stage 4 breast cancer compared to stage 1 and stage 2. Mm-hmm. So about 50% comprising both stage 3 and 4. So when we compare this data to other countries, especially the Western countries, we're actually seeing a different trend where over there, more than 80% are diagnosed at earlier stage 1 and 2. And this is attributed by the fact that there is opportunistic screening or mammogram screening. So this goes to say that I have to say that through the years and decade, campaign awareness for breast cancer, as well as through social media, have increased significantly. Mm-hmm. Let's say we are still having to put in a lot of effort, and hopefully we'll be able to see the shift towards the earlier stage.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, you know, how well we've been doing for early detection of breast cancer if the number of late stage breast cancer patients are still so high, right? I mean, have we been improving in early detection of breast cancer?
Certainly. In terms of the mammogram techniques as well, there's also the introduction of digital tomosynthesis, as well as there is like social media, like what we're doing today. Mm-hmm. All these are actually steps that we are doing, and also women are actually becoming more educated empowering themselves to actually go for mammogram screening. But there's also a whole lot of women out there that because of fear, cultural belief, as well as possibly because of experience with their family members dealing with breast cancer. So that sometimes prevent them from coming early to seek treatment, despite very obvious signs and symptoms. So here we are today actually to try to encourage women to seek early medical attention if they develop symptoms or even go for screening. Because we know screening is important, and the role of screening is that when you're not symptomatic, you want to pick up the disease at a very, very early stage, like i.e. a stage one or even before they become pre-malignant. So by doing something early, then that will improve the prognosis significantly.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, like we spoke about last year, you know, a lot of people were holding back on going for checkups, you know, because of fear of COVID. And that's really not what we want. We want, you know, whatever sign you have, go get your yearly checkups. That is, you know, really, really important,
yes.
Isn't it?
It is sad that the pandemic has turned a lot of things upside down. And one of the things that I notice is that more and more patients are coming in, and not just for breast cancer, for other types of cancer, they are presenting at a later stage because of the hesitancy to actually seek early medical advice, because obviously, you know, don't want to expose themselves to the hospital visits. But my advice would be, if you have persistent symptoms, and even if you've seen your family physician and it's not getting better, please do consult a specialist and get tested. Because again, if you get detected early in any form of cancer, the survival rate improves very much significantly.
Mm-hmm. And what is that rate of significance? You know, I mean, maybe you can give us a very brief refresher on why it's so important, you know, early detection. You know, how does the survival rate of early stage breast cancer patients compare to late stage cancer patients?
So when we diagnose a patient with early stage breast cancer, essentially we're looking at very minimal tumor burden. So it's very localized disease. And we often use the words metastasis, which is when the disease has spread beyond the primary site. So in early stage breast cancer, like stage one, when it's confined to the breast, 5 years, we often use words like 5 years survival rate, 10 years survival rate. Essentially what that means is more than 90% of women who are detected at stage one will still be very well and alive after 5 years, but they will not have a disease recurrence. So they can continue to live their life, have a fulfilling work and, you know, family life. And when the cancer spread to regional nodes, either stage two or three, that survival drops to about 80%, 70 or 80.
Wow.
So then it decreased. And sadly, for stage four disease, it then dropped to below 20%. In 100 women who's diagnosed with stage four in 5 years, only 20% or less would still be alive, and most of them would succumb to their illness.
Okay, that's really
5 years.
Yeah,
and so it goes to show that if you get detected early, then it improves your survival chance of survival significantly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and we've actually got a question here. Well, she's asking for some help here over on WhatsApp. Yap says that she's 37 and she went to do her annual medical checkup, but the hospital downright refused to do one for her, citing you're under 40 and it's not necessary, and totally disregarded her history. And she's asking what she can do.
Thank you, Ms. Yap, for your question. I think that's very relevant. And I'm sure this is an experience that many women faced. So again, I think part of the barrier for us receiving early detection, early screening, is that the clinician play a very important role. And we're talking about primary care physician as well. So we see more and more, myself in my clinical practice, I see more and more women presenting at early, at young age. So you see, if you were to review the National Cancer Registry, you can see that the peak, the age, it kind of start of mid 30s, late 30s, and goes up till right about 70, and then it dropped. So it is not right to assume that just because a woman is in her young age, reproductive age, less than 40, her risk of breast cancer is very low. So I think minimally, when an individual were to present to the doctor, it's important to get a clinical history. Clinical history isn't just you may not have a lump, you know, you may not feel unwell, you may not have any constitutional symptoms like loss of weight and appetite, but it's also very important to elicit the family history.
Yeah.
So because when it comes to breast cancer, it's very important to know what is the family history. So that, i.e., you have to stratify the risk in that patient. So we have the average risk population, someone with no strong family history of cancer, and you have the high risk population. So a lady who has got three close degree relatives, so we call them first degree relatives, i.e. a mom or a siblings who has a breast or ovarian cancer. So these are very relevant and important history to elicit. And if you have that, or if they are a BRCA mutation carrier, then screening should ideally start at 30 years old, not 40 even. Yeah.
Okay.
An average risk, i.e. someone with no strong family history, then screening ideally starts at about 50 if there were no symptoms. But for a high-risk group, around about 30. But of course, a mammogram may not be advisable because of the dense breast in younger patients. So we're talking about ultrasound breast or an MRI.
Mm-hmm. And why is it when you have dense breast that, you know, mammograms aren't the most, you know, the best solution for you?
Yeah, because you may actually miss a very tiny lesion in very dense breast when you use mammographic screening. Mm-hmm. So hence, like MRI would be a better modality to assess.
Okay, all right. And, you know, just going back to what Ms. Yap asked, you know, they disregarded her family history, which is very strange, right? So I guess she should really just, I don't know, what can she do? You know, just go ahead.
Go back either to the same doctor, you know, or always, I would always advise patients seek a second opinion. If you feel something is not right, you know, and you've gone back and it's you don't feel right about it, always seek a second opinion.
Okay. All right. Well, speaking today about, you know, how early detection of breast cancer can save lives, joining me to do that is consultant clinical oncologist, Dr. Jennifer Leong from Sunway Medical Center. If you have any questions at all about breast cancer, breast self-exams, mammograms, anything to do with breast cancer, you can ask them. Just call us at 7733 2900, send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll come back and discuss more about high-risk groups after this quick break. You're tuned to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm Juliet Jacobs, and joining me today is consultant clinical oncologist, Dr. Jennifer Leong from Sunway Medical Center. And we're talking about breast cancer and, you know, focusing specifically on how early detection of breast cancer can save lives. So before the break, Dr. Jennifer, you were telling us about when a woman is considered a high risk of developing breast cancer, right? So you said, especially if they're, they're over 50, you know, they've got genetic risks, or they've got reproductive history of early menstrual cycles and late menopause, you know, that also increases risks. And then we, you know, so if, and also dense breasts we mentioned, and also family or personal history, these are all important things about why you really need to, you know, you're considered high risk. But if a woman falls under these high risk groups, right, what are the breast cancer screening options and recommendations for them? Can you walk us through that?
Sure. So essentially, if someone is less than 40 years old, we would recommend an annual MRI. So someone in the high risk would require annual screening. So either annual ultrasound breast and annual MRI. But of course, the caveat would be if this resource is available, because we know sometimes in it may be resource constrained, especially in a government hospital where MRI is not readily available, then yeah, minimally an ultrasound breast is the first step to go. So someone above 40, you can comfortably do a mammogram. So the pickup rate is really good for that.
All right. And breast MRI. Sorry, carry on.
The other thing would be, I would like to emphasize that I think from my experience, it's women are not comfortable doing self-breast examination. So it well to do it right. So that's also one way to empower ourselves as women, is that we have to slot in regular self-breast examination. On top of that, to actually see a doctor for clinical breast examination. So you do that in between the radiographic screening.
Okay. And, you know, speaking of mammograms and breast self-exams, they are the most common screening options, as you said. But how often should you actually be doing those, especially if you're a woman at higher risk?
So ideally, you would do it once a month and to pick the right time to do it. So the best time would be when you're not, if the individual is still having menses, having their period. So to do it like a week up to 10 days after they have finished their menses, just so the breast is less tender when you're palpating and less lumpy. So of course, for a postmenopausal woman, I think it's easy for us to forget doing all these self-breast examination, self-care, especially when we're also busy with our family, work, and now with the pandemic and, you know, having to take care of children who studies from home and online classes. We often put our self-care at the back among our family care, you know, all that. The priority goes quite low. So I think it's important to schedule them in your diary. So just put a date and make sure you just get it done. And when you're doing the self-breast examination, it's best when you're in a relaxed setting, you're not rushing, you know, in a room with good lighting. And there are many videos that you can find online that teaches you, walk you through the process. Mm. Basically, don't rush yourself and do it well. Because if you do detect them early, you know, you detect any, the best person to know your own breast is yourself. So if you do see any abnormality, even subtle one, you'll be able to detect them and present yourself early to the doctor.
Okay. And I have a question here from Sue, who's asking, why do I often hear that women should usually start going for annual mammograms at the age of 40? Why is 40 that magical age where we need to start?
Very good question. So actually, it depends on which guideline you're looking. So there are a lot, the American, the British, and of course, our Malaysian has its own guideline as well. So for the average risk, it's 50 years old. One of the risk factors for breast cancer is actually increasing age, just like many other cancer. So if you're in the average risk population, 50 years old is when they recommend mammogram screening. And 40 is when you think you're in high risk. Because in the patient with high risk, like if you're a genetic mutation carrier, we tend to see the breast cancer happening at a younger age. Hence, we bring that, you know, forward to like 10 years earlier.
Okay. All right. And, you know, you mentioned breast MRIs are not standard screening tools for breast cancer, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Why is that the case?
I think one would be cost as well. Yeah. Breast. Okay. They are much more expensive. So a screening test essentially have to be reproducible and it has to be widely available to a country. So when it comes to cost effectiveness, you have to pick a screening test that's not just good, but also cost effective.
Okay. And sorry, I just wanted to ask one more thing about our self-exams, right? So as you mentioned, that's the easiest to do. You know, we know our breasts best. You know, we can look for unusual lumps and things like that. But is that all that we need to look out for? You know, what are some common mistakes that women make during breast self-exams?
So I think it's quite common to assume that breast self-exam means just palpation, but actually inspection is very important. So you have to have yourself in a well-lit room, brightly lit room. And like I say, take your time, like after a shower. So look into a mirror and then look for any obvious or any change in the symmetry. So both our breasts are not symmetrical. So but it's important to know if they are different from what you usually see or feel. And then look for teetering or if there's skin puckering or if there's dimpling. As well as if there's any retraction of skin or nipple. So yeah, those are good things. So sometimes you know, if you do look at the videos, they'll ask you to lift up your hands so that you can actually see the fold below the breast as well. So from the inspection, then you lie on the bed and then you do the palpation. So I think the misconception is that most women would just go straight right and just do the palpation and not the inspection. So it comes full.
Okay, so two things that we really need to keep in mind when we're doing our self-exams.
Yeah.
But let's say once we've done the self-breast examination, right, and we do find something suspicious, a suspicious lump perhaps, right? What do we do next? You know, is a lump automatically, you know, the reason to raise the concern or to raise the warning bells?
Yeah. So again, most cancerous lumps are painless. But a lot of misconception would be, you know, if it's painless, I would just leave it. After all, it's not causing me much problem, isn't it? So, why go find out? So, but most breast cancer lumps starts off as a painless lump. But again, not all breast cancer starts off as a lump, right? Sometimes it can just be in the lymph nodes. Sometimes it can just be as subtle as like a nipple discharge, or a skin redness. So again, if you find yourself to have a lump and you're not known to have any cyst or breast cyst or fibroadenoma, it is better, in my advice, to err on the safe side, go seek a medical attention Because what the doctor essentially will do again is to take you through your clinical history, your family history, your age group. And I think nowadays a lot of doctors will not just dismiss the patient, which at least you would consider an ultrasound breast. Okay, so from the ultrasound or mammogram, depending on the age group and suitability of the imaging, then there is actually a scoring system. They call it the BRATS. So if if the lesion looks very abnormal, and the border looks very irregular, then you think that you may want to biopsy this lump. So it all comes with seeking early medical advice, and from there the doctor will make the assessment. And then only from the biopsy, which is when you actually put in a needle into the lump and you take some tissue for testing, then you can confirm if this is malignant or not.
And say a woman regularly does these breast self-exams, right? Would she still need to go for, let's say, annual mammograms?
Yes, because, first, it's good. I applaud all women who does regular self-breast exam. And then, so to enhance that, you have to do your mammogram, because mammogram are able to pick up what we call microcalcification. So these are often non-palpable lumps. So a breast cancer often starts off as a microcalcification, so in the very early stage. So that's where you want to pick them up, and that's where mammogram holds its value.
And let's talk about mammograms now, right? Can you actually walk me through what happens during a mammogram and, you know, what women can expect, especially if it's their first time doing it? It sounds very scary, right? If you've never done it and it's quite intimidating. So maybe you can alleviate those fears.
Yeah. I mean, I had my first mammogram. So I can tell you, it is, even as a clinical oncologist, you know, I advise my patient all the time. It's, of course, you know, you have your anxiety and you're worried about what the result may hold. So I would say that, but look at the positive side, the good part of it, and why the rationale of wanting to do it, the benefit it does hold. If you detect something early, think about the implication to your friend, your family, and, you know, your children. So I went in there, and I think what's important is that the staff, okay, the radiographer make me feel very at ease. And that's very important. So they walk you through the step, what's going to happen. Because a lot of women feel a bit embarrassed to do mammogram. Mm. Because you're exposing yourself. And a part of it is your dignity. But if done in a professional way, it's really quite okay. So I must say that the experience isn't too painful. Of course, it's just uncomfortable. But because the staff explained it very well to me, yeah, so it went very smoothly. And it's finished by about 15 minutes. And then the doctor would then review it and take you through it. So, the process shouldn't take more than half an hour for both breasts. Yeah.
Okay. And I think there's a lot of fear. You know, you said it's uncomfortable, but some women feel or think that, or are afraid that it's very painful. How do you reassure them, you know, and what can they do to make that experience, you know, easier or less painful in that sense?
I think it doesn't help, because we have a lot of friends, you know, family that says that, no, it's so painful. And that kind of like compound the fear that we have. So a lot of it is self-imposed. But what you can do is, of course, some of the things that's been recommended is just avoid caffeine up to a week or two. If you have a planned mammogram, then you can actually avoid caffeine, because that can reduce breast tenderness. And then also when you're going through the process, just, I think, focus on something else that shifts your attention and your anxiety. And they include like breathing technique.
Ah.
So focus on breathing technique. And it's a relatively quite quick process. And some women with very low threshold of pain, I would advise you can take just some analgesia, some painkiller, just right before the mammogram. So all this helps.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, don't think too much about it, you know, just treat it like a regular checkup, and there's always ways to sort of alleviate whatever pain that might come with it, right?
Because the pain is quite transient, actually. It's just, you know, when the compression happens, and then after that, it goes off. It's not like a bruise, or you develop a bruise or swelling. No, it's not like that at all.
Okay. All right. You're reassuring me. I'm going to have to start from next year. So I'm also terrified, you know, but trying to not be. And, you know, how would a woman know if they need to start going for regular mammograms at a younger age because of other factors that put them at higher risk, like, you know, what we spoke about earlier, genetics or a family history of cancer?
Mm-hmm. How would a woman know?
Yeah, that they need to start going for regular mammogram at a younger age, lah, you know, not, you know.
Yeah, it's not the typical like 50 years old.
Yeah.
So I think it's important now to know. Usually most of us would know, like if you have a mom, I have a lot of patients whose daughter come with the mom for consultation. And I find it's good that they are thinking about themselves as well. Like, doctor, when should I get screened? Yeah. So if you have got very strong family history, like a mom who has got breast cancer, or three family members that are close to you that have breast or ovarian, then certainly what I advise is that these women can shift their screening earlier. Of course, what we're also trying to do as a clinician is to try to encourage genetic screening. So genetic screening is when you advise a patient to see a genetic counselor, and then you get assessed. So it's a blood test, and it's time to actually see if they're essentially a mutation carrier, like BRCA mutation. So like what Angelina Jolie had.
That's right, yeah.
Prophylactic mastectomy. But of course, there's a little bit of implication there, and some women are uncomfortable to do it because if they're a BRCA mutated carrier, and if that's going to have any implication on insurance and things. But let's say we were to put all the technical aside. So the ideal way would the patient get tested, and if she carries the mutation, then all her lineage, like her children, will have to be tested as well. Because that can potentially shift the screening to earlier. And it's not just breast cancer. We're talking about colon cancer. There's a risk there. So colonoscopy and things, yeah. So that's important to know your family history. And then the other group that we also do screening early is those who have undergone radiotherapy to the chest wall. So for a young patient who have had, for example, lymphoma, and they had radiotherapy to the chest, so it's very close to where the breast is. So the breast will have received some form of irradiation. And we advocate 8 years from them completing the radiotherapy, they should start getting MRI assessment.
Okay.
Because their risk of breast cancer increased by many fold.
Okay, and right. And is there a point where women can actually stop going for regular mammograms?
So 70 is what the guideline recommends, up to 70 years old. So again, we go back to the registry, you will see that the curve peaks, and up to 70, it then declines. So the incidence rate starts to drop after 70. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm speaking today to Dr. Jennifer Leong. She's a consultant clinical oncologist from Sunway Medical Center. We're talking all about breast cancer. We're talking about how early detection of breast cancer can save lives. If you have any questions at all, anything, you know, just ask. Dr. Jennifer is here to answer any questions at all. You can call us at 03-7733-2900. You can send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back for more after this quick ad break. You're listening to Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm Juliet Jacobs, and on the line with me today is Dr. Jennifer Leong, consultant clinical oncologist from Sunway Medical Center. We're talking about breast cancer today, everything about it, you know, how early detection, of course, can save your life. If you have any questions at all, Dr. Jennifer is here to answer. Call us at 03-7733-2900. Send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. So, Dr. Jennifer, you know, you've outlined, you know, all the different things that we can do, and of course, why early detection is so important. And, you know, there's many ways that we can do it. Of course, self-exams and mammograms, really important. Are there barriers or anything, you know, that sort of prevent or discourage women from going in for regular mammograms or accessing them? And, you know, that will just lead to delaying possible early diagnosis of breast cancer, right? What are some of the barriers as far as you're concerned?
So, of course, one of the main barriers would be accessibility to all women. So, like, women living in the rural area may not have easily, ready access to mammogram. The education level plays an important role because it's closely related to our awareness, screening. So the lack of awareness in some group of women then lead to delayed diagnosis because they may not be aware of how important it is. But I think one of the main barrier that I've seen so far is actually the fear of knowing that this is likely a cancer. So having a lump that is increasing in size and often coming in at late stage, a lot of time it's actually the fear of knowing it's cancer, either stemming from their own experience of having seen a relative, you know, living with breast cancer and undergoing the treatment. So puts them off and they perhaps just not think about it. But again, that's where we come in, to try to educate them that yes, if you find a lump, you should get it checked early, because early treatment again saves life, but early treatment also means less cost that's involved. Yeah, and then less time taken off the caretaker, all these hidden costs that we don't see when it comes to taking care of a patient with advanced cancer. So the main barrier I find here would be fear of knowing that cancer diagnosis. But of course, we're always work in progress. We can always try to improve our accessibility of having, hopefully one day, all women in Malaysia will be able to get access to mammogram screening readily.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as you mentioned earlier, you know, a lot of us, we put our family or our work or everything else, we put everything else before
us.
Right? Our health is always the last thing on our mind. So that's also something that we really need to overcome. And put yourself first, you know, you can't.
Sometimes it's just like scheduling the appointment. You keep putting it off, you know, because you find that it's not important. And then during the COVID, a lot of women stop, you know, a lot of patients stop doing the regular screening, the medical screening and the mammogram and the pap smear screening as well.
Yeah, I know I got scolded by my gynecologist because I was there for all my children's vaccinations, but I wasn't going to see her. And she scolded me nicely. Like, she said, how are you going to look after your kids if you don't look after yourself, right? The bottom line is that we've got a question here from Michelle. Michelle says she's 61 years old. She wants to know, what is the interval by years that she should do the mammogram screenings?
Very good question. Thank you for listening in, Michelle. So the recommended, if it's a normal screening in an average risk, i.e. not high risk population, is between 2 to 3 years, you should repeat a mammogram. But for high risk, the guidelines still recommends yearly.
Okay, all right. And, you know, just from a clinical perspective, Dr. Jennifer, what are the limitations of breast cancer screenings? And, you know, when you are talking to your patients, how do you explain these limitations when it happens?
Limitation to breast cancer screening, as in like if there's any false negative?
Yeah, so let's say, for example, screening options may be inconclusive, is a woman has dense mm-hmm. breasts, as we spoke about earlier, you know, those sorts of things.
Yeah. So again, it's important to know that not all tests is 100% reliable. So it's mammogram itself has a false negative rate of about 8 to 10%. So ultimately, it comes down to that the mammogram should be able to complement your clinical acumen, your clinical assessment. So if someone is presenting with very clear cut of maybe inflammatory breast cancer where you don't actually have breast lump, but the whole breast is engorged, so you still go by your clinical suspicion and you may discuss with the breast surgeon on biopsying the lesion. So I would actually tell the patient that the gold standard, which means the recommended screening to detect early breast cancer, is still mammogram. And if let's say the mammogram shows negative result, there's still a small possibility of 8 to 10% false negative. So that does not preclude them from stopping their breast examination. Yeah, and then and to look out for any possible constitutional symptoms. So sometimes some women may present with very small lumps, but very florid distant disease, like, you know, their loss of weight, loss of appetite, very significant liver disease. So all these constitutional symptoms, I would advise my patient as well. Because obviously most of my patients would be diagnosed with breast cancer already. And the mammogram is no longer a screening. It's actually more of a therapeutic, it's a surveillance. So for someone who is living with breast cancer, following the active treatment, mammogram become a surveillance method to actually detect for local recurrence.
Okay, all right. And, you know, what do you think are other ways we can improve early detection of breast cancer among Malaysian women? I mean, a lot of us know about Pink October, right? And that's, of course, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. But is it simply just raising awareness about breast cancer? Is that enough to encourage patients to do regular screenings as far as you're concerned?
So one is, of course, I think social media plays such an important role this day. More so during the pandemic, everyone's like on their phone, tablet, you know, TV. So you know, continuously raising awareness about breast cancer through the social media. But I think the clinicians, the family GPs, you know, the primary physician plays a very important role. So if possible, we want to do opportunistic screening. You know, the women may be coming in for other problems. And if you get a chance to see them and have this awareness at the back of your head, you would then advise these women, sort of like catch them. Yeah. And you know what? You should go do your mammogram. And I do that with my patient. They'll be innocently walking in, you know, for other things. But I would examine their breasts, and they are very grateful that you do it because, you know, we're always so busy in our clinic and all. But I think it doesn't take you a long time to do a proper clinical exam and then just sort of like nudge them and say, have you done a mammogram? I can honestly tell you not many Malaysians have done a screening mammogram. Even when they're in their 60s, they have not. And they will like laugh at you or smile at you sheepishly and say, oh no, doctor, I have not. So then I try to advise them. And you always try to give them the rationale why you want to do it. Because, you know, you have a risk of developing cancer with now having this ovarian cancer or something. So you speak, you tell them about the rationale. And often when you do that, and they are on board with it. And I have to say most of it works. And they've done it. And when you've done it, it's negative. You can see the relief. They're like, okay, I've got it done.
Okay. So. Yeah, it's always that fear, isn't it? It's just you don't want to know. You'd rather just deal with it when it happens. But yeah, it's better to have...
It's better when they are readily accepting, like they know why it's good for them.
Yeah.
You don't want to end up pushing them to do something they're not comfortable with.
Yeah. We have another question here from Jessica who's asking, will a breast cyst, which is confirmed, progress to cancer later on? And she has no history of cancer.
Yeah. So the risk of the cyst progressing, it's quite low. But what I would do is just advise Jessica to continue monitoring its size and its shape. So you know, either go for a regular ultrasound screening and again, just self-breast examination.
Okay. All right. And I guess, you know, even though breast cancer is the most common among women, and of course, as we've been talking about, early detection means high survivability, a cancer diagnosis is still not easy to digest, right? It's terrifying, actually. What are patients' fears and concerns at the point of receiving a positive diagnosis? And how do you help to address those concerns?
Yeah, I think it never gets easier as an oncologist to break the news. A lot of time, the responsibility of breaking the news of cancer falls back to the oncologist. So it'll be like, okay, go see Dr. Jennifer and she'll explain it to you. So yeah, they walk in and you can see the anxiety, you know, when they first walk in, a lot of time with their close family, either their spouse or their children. And the anxiety is really clearly written on all their face. Even if it's early stage, it's still a cancer diagnosis. So I often take it easy on my first consultation and get to know the patient just as a whole, because you know you don't want to treat them just like they're having cancer, but they're human, and get to know their family support. And then I will explain the staged, as well as assess the coping mechanism. Because everyone deals with receiving bad news or cancer diagnosis differently, right? All of us has got different stage of coping mechanism. So they're obviously the shock phase and then the denial and then perhaps anger. It could be like, what have I done to deserve, you know, getting this? I don't have a family history of breast cancer, doctor. So why would I get this now? So I think it's good to let them vent. And then when they're in their acceptance phase, then it's easier for them to accept the treatment approach. So a lot of time when you first talk to them about treatment and all, I think it's a bit of a blur. So you've got to be prepared to, you know, need to explain it a few times and just give them time to digest it and ask you the question.
And
it's easier with time. No, it doesn't. But that's why we are there, to actually reassure the patient that we are there for them and that we will guide them through the treatment selection. Because sometimes maybe the treatment that we offer may not be what they want. So it's also important to align, you know, what is their comfort level, what kind of treatment they want, what kind of side effects they're not willing to accept, and then sort of, make an informed decision.
Together, right? That's so important.
Yeah, the right word here is together, yeah.
Yeah. And are there any questions that, you know, if let's say I'm coming to see you, you know, I mean, maybe I can start prepping some sort of questions that I should ask my oncologist as well.
I think on top of it, it's always like how, you know, even in early stage or advanced stage, how long more do I have? Mm. Yeah. It's not as technical as what's my survival rate, right? What's 5 years, 10 years? No, it doesn't happen. Like, doctor, will I be able to see my, you know, children graduate? Oh, and they have young children, will I die even in a very, you know, realistic way? So, yes, so that's where the prognosis. Then again, this prognosis and, you know, 90%, 80%, they are an estimation, I always tell the patient. So ultimately, also, there's a lot of other factors, the tumor biology and things like that. So first of all is, of course, survival. And then almost all of them will ask you about their diet, because I think diet is... an aspect of the during the cancer treatment is something that they can control. It's something they have power over, right? They can control what they can eat and what they can't. So it's important. It's actually a big part of my conversation with the patient is on their diet. And then, of course, on rest, exercise. And now we're in a pandemic. I have to say then the COVID-19 vaccine also come into play. So can I get a vaccine? When can I get it? So to time it in between the treatment as well.
Okay. Just quickly, we've got one more question here from Jessica, who's heard that time and time again, chemo is the treatment which killed most of the breast cancer victims because it's too harsh. She wants to know what your comments are on that. Can you dispel some myths there?
So I think chemotherapy worked for us and worked against us a lot of time. And actually, it's very true that chemotherapy may be the reason why some patients delay seeking treatment early, because, you know, you would have almost every patient whom I would to advise for chemo would say, you know, someone who had done it and then they passed on and things. I must say chemotherapy, it's not easy, but it is definitely manageable. So it's again being very careful when you offer what kind of patient, what group of patient chemotherapy. So oncologists will often look at a few factors. One is how fit the patient is. So someone who is old may not necessarily means they can't get chemo. But if they have underlying medical problem like heart disease, you know, diabetes with kidney failure and all that. So, of course, you select the patient carefully. And then before each cycle of chemo, we will have done blood tests. We also check their heart fitness level. So all these are done pre-chemo. So it would have mean the patient must be fit, you know, to undergo the chemo. As such, then they are counseled for it. Then, of course, sometimes even in the fittest of patient, they develop side effects, right? Fever and all that. So again, it's to empower the patient to know what to look for. So most of my patients would also readily just check the temperature at home. They will have thermometer. And then the moment it hits a certain level, they will actually inform me. So it being accessible to the patient that they can get to you or that they know that this is when I need to come back to the emergency department. So one of the greatest fear of doing chemo is, of course, when you develop fever and your white cell count is too low for your immunity to work against the infection. So that's when you tell patient you must come back to the emergency department. Other than that, side effects such as vomiting, nausea, we have fantastic drugs nowadays that work very well to try to minimize the nausea and vomiting. And also, you know, you can basically just empower the patient to take rest, hydration, things like that. And I think a lot of time the chemotherapy is often manageable.
Okay. All right. I hope that, you know, helps Jessica, you know, not feel so fearful about it.
So too.
Before I let you go, Dr. Jess, any last message, Dr. Jennifer, that you'd like to leave us with?
Well, October is the, like you say, Pink October month. But, you know, besides being October, I think we women have to really prioritize self-care. You know, it's very busy out there. You know, we're working and taking care of a family. But remember, all small things may lead to big outcome. So early detection. So it's not just breast mammogram screening. Yeah, so cervical smear screening also saves life. So as a woman myself, I would say that, you know, and as an oncologist, when you see the disease at an early stage or even precancerous stage, your survival increases significantly. So if you found a lump and you're not sure about it, please do seek medical advice. And this is when, if you're listening in and you're a man, okay, and you're a wife, yeah, or a sister or mom, please do encourage them, because the encouragement from family members is equally important, if not more than the doctors. I think that works better. Encourage them and try to tell them that, you know, you're doing it not just for yourself, but for your family, for your young children. So go get yourself checked if you haven't already.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Jennifer. But before that, you know, we did promise a giveaway at the start of today's show. Mm-hmm. And this is, of course, in support of breast cancer awareness. So Sunway Medical Center is giving away free mammogram screenings exclusively for BFM listeners. You'll be in the running to win if you are a woman aged 40 and above and have not gotten your mammogram done at Sunway Medical Center before. So all you need to do is answer this question correctly. After what age should you consider going for regular mammogram screenings if you're not in a high-risk group? And the answer A, 30 years old and above, or B, 50 years old and above. So if you'd want, I'm sure we heard that answer there from Dr. Jennifer earlier. So send us a WhatsApp message with the correct answer, your name and email address to 018-789-8899. And if you are among the lucky winners, Sunway Medical Center will get in touch with you. My thanks again to you, Dr. Jennifer Leong, Consultant Clinical Oncologist from Sunway Medical Center. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much, Juliet.
This has been Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.